Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly, vigorous, relentless, and sometimes ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the extraordinarily well-armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. My pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio. Just a free man here, trying to stay afloat in the sea of communism. Encourage you to be a part of the show with your calls, your questions, comments, criticism. You can call the show 563-999-3787. If you're catching the live show, 563-999-3787. Start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. And you can also interact with the show, a couple different options with that. You can use the live chat option, which is from the Blog Talk Radio page. And you can also comment on the Well-Armed Radio MeWe page, which we'll see if anybody's nothing in there yet. You know, it's summer. I'm a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm a little bit fast and loose with my, excuse me, fast and loose with my show start times. Listenership in the summer is definitely significantly lower than listenership in the winter. But in fact, I don't think last week there was nobody in the chat last week. So that's my easiest way to know if anybody's listening live. I'd have to go look through Blog Talk's metrics through their analytics to see if I can see how many people listened live versus the podcast. But yeah, hopefully come winter, we'll get some, certainly we'll be starting the show earlier. Sometimes usually 7 o'clock during the winter, 7:30. We do have someone in. We got Lon here tonight. Lon is in the chat. Lon from WASA. Lon, great to have you in. Good to see you. So we'll get it going here. And August 8th, you know, August is kind of like the soft, tender, gooey, yummy part of summer. I mean, usually June in Wisconsin, it can kind of be summer. It can kind of feel like spring. Lakes aren't necessarily always warmed up. July comes around and July is pretty busy with holidays and vacations and getting to do all this stuff. I mean, July is usually full of things like, I don't know, Summerfest and county fairs and things like that. And then August comes around. It's like July is where you started to do the things in summer that you're meant to do in summer. You know, the things that you do in the hot weather, I don't know, going to the beach, being out in the lake, that kind of stuff. And then, your your reintroduction to those things from a near year's hiatus. And then you start to get summer down pat. And then you're into August when you still have warm weather and you've kind of done some of the summer things that you usually like to do. And maybe you're doing some of the summer things that, you know, either you're doing summer things that you once you do the things high on your list, your high priority summer activities, and then you start to get some of those out of the way and you start to get into some of your wish list items for summer. That seems like August for me. You know, July, we're getting on the boat. June, we're getting on the boat, but it's still Lake Michigan's still cold. And, you know, no longer boat inland. But even when it was, you know, early June, even inland lakes tended to be a little bit chilly. And then sometimes the weather was even chilly in June here in Wisconsin. But then once you get to July, you're almost always into the warm stuff and getting to do some of your things. Then by August, I don't want to say you're bored of things because, look, this is summer in Wisconsin and it only lasts for 12 weeks if we're lucky, 8 weeks on average. But you start to get some of your activities in, and then maybe you get to start to feel comfortable doing them. You know, it gets to be a little bit of a routine here. And that's what August is for me. Like when we used to be boating inland, by August, we've been to, you know, the various lakes that we like to go. It's just left for kind of not the dog days of summer, because I wouldn't say that here. It's just summer's too short to feel like dog days in Wisconsin. But you just get into doing, you kind of get good at summer by August. You've got your activities, you've gotten them in, you feel like you've done some stuff, and either you're settling into your summer routine and it's kind of becoming old hat, but like a comfortable old hat, or you've kind of done some things. This is what we used to do, because by this time, by August, it used to be like, okay, we'd been to Pewaukee Lake, you know, 8 times on the boat, and it starts to get a little bit, not mundane, but a little bit routine. And we'd start looking for different places to go. That's when we might haul our boat up to Madison and drop it on the Madison Lakes for a nice day or something like that. Now, obviously, we don't have a trailer boat, so we're on Lake Michigan, but you know, the water's starting to warm up on Lake Michigan. It's, you know, in the 70s and it's comfortable swimming. And so you got some good weekends coming up here. State Fair here in southeastern part of the state, Milwaukee County. That's always a good time. Canceled last year. So it's that feeling where, okay, we've had summer here in Wisconsin when it's cold and rainy and whatever, snowy. It just feels like summer doesn't exist. It just feels like summer's, because winter you get such a good dose of. Winter you get, you start getting the taste of winter, and you don't, maybe you do, you start getting the taste of winter in you know, late October. Usually get a cold day or two in October, sometimes more than that. Some really cold days. Sometimes you get some like 40, 50 degree days in October, maybe one or two. And then November comes and then you're really into it. I mean, you can still have warm weather in November certainly too, but you're getting the taste. And then December comes and you probably got some pretty cold weather. Sometimes even a lot of snow, sometimes not. We all know what January, February like is in Wisconsin. And then with the exception of a few extraordinarily warm years, March is more like February junior than spring. And then April, you start to get a taste. You know, sometimes March gives you a taste. I mean, we've had 80 degree days here in southeastern Wisconsin in March, but they're pretty rare. But sometimes then April starts to give you a taste. April starts to give you maybe a 70 or two, a sunny 70 degree day in April. And you're like, okay, this is what it felt like in that tiny sliver of season I remember called summer. And then it gets yanked away again. Then you get some more cold and then a lot of rain and you can't do the stuff you want to do. And then I always say April showers bring May showers here in Wisconsin. And then May gives you a couple more tastes of what summer might be like, but not, then it jerks it away. You know, hit or miss. Sometimes you get some warm days during the week and then the weekend still ends up being cold and uncomfortable. Then June comes around and then June's like, sometimes you get summer in June and sometimes you don't. Sometimes you get summer by June 15th, maybe you start to really see summer, but by the end of June, that's when you've got summer. Okay, summer is here. It is coming. This is the reason we love the weather in this state so much. June, end of June, you know, 4th of July is usually good, hot, nice, hot weather. July is when you start to do your summer stuff. And then by August, it feels like it's real. I mean, you've done your summer things. The warm weather's been here. You know, you haven't had a 50 degree day. You forget what the 50 degree days feel like. That's what July is. July is where you forget what 50 degree high days feel like. And then in August is where you start to get enough of summer to where sometimes on a hot summer, you can feel like, okay, I wouldn't mind some cooler weather. But otherwise, August is where you just sit back and you get into that, what I said at the beginning of this segment, the big gooey part of summer that you can really sink your teeth into. And you've filled you're not starving for summer anymore because you had summer in July. And now you can just enjoy the summer. You know, you filled up your stomach with summer in July because June leaves you wish. June's just an appetizer here in Wisconsin. June leaves you wishing for summer, but not getting it. June gives you that, you know, that little taste of summer that June's like communion at a Catholic church. You know, you get a little sip of wine, just a little bit on your lips, but you don't get to take a gulp. So yeah, that's what August is. And August is a great time of year here in Wisconsin, and looking forward to the remaining weekends that we have here. Going to get some quality time in on the boat, which we didn't get this weekend because of rain on Saturday. Had a nice, played some golf Friday night, and then that got cut short because of rain. Did get 9 holes in, but out of Pewaukee, Nagawaukee Golf Course, and then wanted to take the boat out Saturday. By the time we got down there, about 1 o'clock, the radar wasn't looking friendly, and so we ended up not taking the boat out. Just went down by the lake, and there was some dry periods. We still took a little bit of walk down by the fishing pier by South Milwaukee, but so next weekend's looking good. Next weekend, they're saying 80 and sunny, and that's that meaty August summer day that we're into. So let's lay into the show tonight, because I got some things I want to talk about, and then I'm going to do my off-topic stuff at the end of the show again and talk about what I love to talk about, and that's yachting. But we're going to save that for the end of the show again. I'm not going to make you guys suffer through that at the beginning. So the first thing I wanted to talk about tonight, No Better Friend Corp. This is Kevin Nicholson. He was a candidate for United States Senate. Was that 2 years ago when I want to say it was 2 years ago when the female senator, the lesbo from Madison, come on. Why am I drawing a blank on Wisconsin's Ron Johnson and who's the female senator from Wisconsin? I'm 46. I feel like this is one of those senior moments. Leah, no, come on. Leah Vukmir was the Republican that was running against Kevin Nicholson. I can picture her. Why? This is where you feel like you got Alzheimer's when you can't. Damn, I am running a. Tammy Baldwin. Jeez, there you go. I had to Google it. Just drew a blank there. So for Tammy Baldwin's seat, Kevin Nicholson, Leah Vukmir squared off in a primary. Lon had a Baldwin. I don't know why. That happens to me every once in a while. There's someone like that I know. And once in a while, every once in a while, you draw a blank on their name. And that's what makes me think, am I getting Alzheimer's? I mean, I'm joking, but that's been happening to me for years. I think it happens to everybody, or hopefully it happens to everybody. Otherwise, I really will feel like I'm getting Alzheimer's here. But sometimes your brain is off in this different frame of mind. And that said, she's been quiet for a while. You know, Ron Johnson's been in the news a lot. Tammy Baldwin, you haven't heard a thing out of her in quite some time. But so Kevin Nicholson was running against Leah Vukmir in the primary. Leah Vukmir, the only support she had was the establishment support, the formal Republican Party, the party faithful. And then so she beat Kevin Nicholson in the primary and then got torched in the general election up against Tammy Baldwin. And so Kevin Nicholson formed the No Better Friend Corp. It was some, you know, kind of a, it's not a political action committee, but kind of an activist organization, a conservative organization to stay active and front and center here in Wisconsin. They've been sending out this isn't the first time they've done it, but they send out a newsletter. I think they sent one out last summer. They sent one out this summer. Summer 2021 newsletter update from No Better Friend Corp. Just celebrated the 2-year anniversary of No Better Friend Corp. For years, I knew, this is reading from this Kevin Nicholson statement here, I knew there was a need to grow the conservative movement in Wisconsin to attract more people to our belief in the importance of empowering people to achieve their dreams, the need to showcase and educate others on the conservative public policy agenda that has never been more clear. At No Better Friend Corp., our team works tirelessly to share the positive impact of conservative policy solutions with the people of Wisconsin while growing the conservative movement in all corners of our state by meeting people where they're at on the issues they care about. We continue to host events all over the state, run issue campaigns, and we've reached so many people across Wisconsin. This update includes our work this year. We hope you'll join us at an upcoming event online through social media. We're active on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Follow us so we can stay in touch. Looking forward to seeing you soon. Kevin Nicholson, volunteer CEO and president, No Better Friend Corp. And that's nobetterfriendcorp.com. So this is the newsletter that goes out. But here's the thing that always sticks out to me, because this isn't the first time. And I've kind of tweaked him on this one before. I know Kevin. I like Kevin. And this isn't exclusive to him, though. I'm going to pick on No Better Friend Corp. Now, they got their five pillars on this update that goes out, this newsletter. It's let's see this. So 1, 2, 3, it's a 4-pager. So, it's essentially one big 11x17 sheet folded. That's, 8.5x11, 4 pages, 8.5x11, printed both sides. So the pillars, the five pillars for No Better Friend Corp. Pillar number one, economic growth. Pillar number two, education. Pillar number three, healthcare. Pillar number four, pro-life advocacy. And pillar number five, national defense. There's a pillar missing there. And I've tweaked him on this before. I haven't said it to Kevin personally, but on social media, I kind of tagged him in some stuff this year. But here we go. Second Amendment, absent. And this isn't unusual for conservative organizations. The Second Amendment just always seems to be the redheaded stepchild of platform issues for too many. It's a troubling omission. And I ask myself why. Like, why wouldn't a conservative organization – here's the thing. Economic growth, education, healthcare, pro-life advocacy, national defense. I mean, I'll put Second Amendment above healthcare. Healthcare is a pillar for a conservative organization. That seems pandering to me. I mean, healthcare is an issue that the media puts out there. Healthcare is an issue that the media keeps wanting to make campaign issues, because I think they think that issue favors Democrats because Democrats want to give away free shit on healthcare. You know, education, I mean, you know, this was one of their pillars last year. Education, I mean, for me, the government needs to get the F out of education. That said, now we've had all this exposure of what we see with critical race theory and things like that. So we could say that education, I think, in this year has become more of a pillar. I think historically education, like if you want to talk about education and somehow some bullshit about making college affordable and any, you know, trying to play into the Democrat talking point on education, it's an issue where it seems like the only thing the Republican conservative groups would have to do is to try to pander, to try to be Democrat light. Now, if there's something else out there, I'd love to hear it, but that's just my worry. When I hear conservative groups talk about education, economic growth, sure. I mean, that's a conservative issue. I mean, that's the heart of the conservative issue, capitalism and freedom. Pro-life advocacy, okay. I mean, that's a conservative issue, pro-life. National defense, certainly conservative issue. But when you start putting education and healthcare on a conservative platform, to me, it seems like it's an attempt to pander. And I'm not so sure those are the issues that you're going to win. Freedom has a message here. And that could be wrong. I mean, freedom has a solution for healthcare. Freedom has a solution for education. Do I think that that's the direction that No Better Friend Corp is going to go? Ball busting for freedom on those issues? I don't. And for that reason, I think that you can be ball busting for freedom on economic growth, ball busting for freedom with pro-life, ball busting for freedom with national defense. But education and healthcare, I just worry that those require a little bit too much of the, I don't want to say libertarian because that's such a dirty word, coming from a recovering libertarian, but healthcare and education in a conservative platform just leave themselves open to a lot of pandering and trying to be Democrat light. And that's my concern here. Missing from this list is the Second Amendment. And I ask myself why. It's a troubling omission when all these, because you know, come campaign season, they're going to be, and I did. I mean, I was contacted by Kevin Nicholson and I appreciate that. I mean, I appreciated you know, him reaching out to me and being interested in the Second Amendment vote here in Wisconsin. But why is it not a pillar issue for their organization in a marketing sense? It's not here on their. And I look through and I don't see anything on the Second Amendment in any of their, you know, things that they talk about on their. You know, they talk about back the badge. They talk about fighting critical race theory. They talk about the No Better Friends for Life conference. They talk about summer movie nights with No Better Friend Corp. They talk about the Right Idea podcast, a podcast from No Better Friend Corp. But yeah, nothing on the Second Amendment. And I find that troubling. Is it because it's too controversial? Or is it because it's not top of mind? Just wasn't something they thought about? Did they think about it? And did they think that the Second Amendment is, you know, that's too conservative. That's too freedom-minded. That's too much of a Republican issue, which is a mistake to think. It's not. The growth in right to carry is occurring outside of conservatives. Conservatives, that was your 2010 to 2013 and prior. Those were your hardcore. Now the concealed carry has been the law of the land in Wisconsin for quite some time. I mean, I'm telling you, concealed carry, and this is happening nationwide. The growth of right to carry is not the conservative side. If you want to appeal to people that you want to appeal to outside of your traditional Republicans, right to carry is the angle to go. The Second Amendment is the angle to go because look what happened after the riots last year in Kenosha. You couldn't find a gun on a gun store anywhere within, 100 miles of Kenosha. there was just that much of a run on guns during the riots and things. People that had never, I had friends whose wives were kind of against having a gun in the house. And after the riots last summer, they got a gun. And that happened all across the country. If you want to make inroads with non-traditional Republican voters, the Second Amendment should be one of your damn pillars. So again, why wasn't it in there? Is it too controversial? Was it not top of mind? No matter the reason, if it's one or two, if it's one of those or the other or both, wasn't really top of mind, or maybe when it did come up, it was too controversial. Expect nothing better come legislative season from people in these organizations. If you can't be publicly supportive of the Second Amendment, during an even non-campaign season, there's no way you're going to be committed to it when you're in public office. There's no way you're going to be a ball buster for the Second Amendment once you get in office. If you think it's too controversial to put in your organization's marketing materials, again, I'm not saying Kevin Nicholson's not. I mean, I've supported Kevin Nicholson against the primary with Leah Vukmir, and you know, and this is, I'll say the same thing with Trump. Trump was not a champion for the Second Amendment. He wasn't. I still wholeheartedly support Trump. And I'll, you know, we'll see. I think Kevin Nicholson wants to run for Senate again, but he's not going to run against Ron Johnson. You know, I don't know if there's other offices he's got his eye on, but I really think Senate maybe is what he's got his eye on. It's too bad because I say this and then I talk about wanting to see Trump elected again and things happen at the national level. When Sheriff Clark goes to, speaking of which, did anybody make it to Sheriff Clark's rally on Friday? I didn't. I mean, I had so much going on. I've been to his other rallies in Tulsa and things, but Madison, there's just no way I was going to Madison rally for Friday. But hopefully it was a good rally. I didn't see anything on the news, but I didn't really catch the news over the weekend. I get a little bit unplugged in the weekend. But Sheriff Clark had a big rally at the Capitol on Friday, and hopefully that went well. But Sheriff Clark went to D.C. and said that he's been to D.C. and he believes D.C. is irreparably broken. Now, that said, he's still a Trump supporter, and we still want to see Trump reelected out in D.C. So that tells you that there could be – when I say Kevin Nicholson running for – if U.S. Senate is what he's got his eye on and he wouldn't run for a statewide office, that makes me think that he's – not that he's wasting his time, but if I believe Senator Clark that – if I believe Sheriff Clark that the United States, the D.C. is irreparably broken, then anybody who wants to go out to D.C. to be a senator, I ask myself, is there any point to that? Can they really make a difference? So I do believe that, you know, I want to believe Sheriff Clark that D.C. is irreparably broken, but it would have to be fixed at some point. And so we're going to have a federal government. So if we have some allies out there in D.C., it couldn't be anything but helpful, at least to slow the spread of communism in this country. And I say that leading into another topic that I'm going to talk about here of where this country's headed. It's just troubling to see that No Better Friend Corp doesn't have something front and center on the Second Amendment. I scratch my head because if you're really tuned into Second Amendment issues, you would know that, look, you want to appeal to inner city folks who value their personal security. My gosh, will you please embrace the Second Amendment as a platform issue? There is no better issue inroads with Democrat-leaning voters who aren't committed Democrats than the Second Amendment. And here you've got No Better Friend Corp. Don't even have it as a pillar. Don't even have it as one of their pillars. And again, I'm picking on them here tonight, but I mean, pick your, you know, there's other conservative organizations out there and they're doing the same thing. Republicans up and down the street, organizations, they're just not taking advantage of, and Democrats would never do this. Democrats, like there's a, if crime and, when people want free shit, Democrats know right how to get in there and offer the be the candy man and Santa Claus and offer them. when it comes to crime and safety and personal safety and self-defense, there is so much that you could offer for freedom. You don't have to offer big government programs. You don't have to offer stimulus, handouts, new entitlements. Just expand right to carry. And you could appeal to, you make it an issue. Make it a front and center issue, and you would appeal to all kinds of people in the cities who are genuinely afraid. That's the thing. These Republicans out in the suburbs, you know, they don't have a good pulse of people in the inner city. And if they did, maybe Joe Sanfilippo, he kind of seems to get it sometimes when it comes to crime, and because he's got a part of his, I think he's from West Dallas, used to live in West Dallas. Now he lives in New Berlin, but his district still represents a part of West Dallas, which is turning into, you know, Milwaukee Junior over here in West Dallas. But I'm not as concerned about the fact that the Second Amendment was omitted as one of their pillars as I'm concerned about why it was omitted. How does it not occur to a conservative organization to have gun rights issues top of mind? Speaking about gun rights issues top of mind, Republicans in Madison have introduced a bill to allow concealed carry at 18. And I certainly support this. I think it's a great bill introduced by I've got the bill details here. Take me a second here to flip through my. This is Assembly Bill 498. This was introduced by Representative Sortwell, Tittle, Branjan. Janelle Branjan's awesome. She's, I think, Menominee Falls area. She's awesome. And she's doing a lot of stuff with election reform, too. And I met Janelle in person a couple times, and I think she's fantastic. Cabral, Guevara, Gundrum. Representative James, Representative Krug, Representative Moses, Representative Murphy, Representative Pershinky, Representative Summerfield, Representative Thiesfeldt, Representative Witchkers, and Representative Tussler, Ron Tussler from the Fox Valley. Co-sponsored by Senator Bradley, Senator handles part of New Berlin, town of I think it's town of Vernon, Muskego, that part of the state. An act to amend State Statute 175.6, 1G and 175.6, 3A, relating to minimum age to be eligible for a license to carry a concealed weapon. Analysis by the LRB. Current law generally prohibits an individual from carrying a concealed weapon unless the individual has a license to carry a concealed weapon that is issued by the Department of Justice. Under current law, the Department of Justice may not issue a license to an individual who is under the age of 21. This bill lowers the minimum age requirement from 21 to 18. Pretty straightforward bill. Again, no entitlement, no big spending requirement, no big budget line item this needs to be. No, it's freedom. This bill is peddling freedom. And freedom is free from a dollar standpoint. So great bill. Glad to see it introduced. Representative Sortwell, I mean, he's the real deal. I look at people, look at who's not. I mean, I don't know how many, and it's, you know, it's early. This was introduced August 4th. It's August 8th. So it's only been forward less than a week. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 assembly reps are signed on to this. It was referred to the criminal justice, the Assembly Committee on Criminal Justice and Public Safety. That is chaired by Representative Spiros, Vice Chair Representative Horlocker. Members of the committee, Senator Sortwell, who introduced this bill, Dukow, Novak, Schra, Krug, James, Stephan, Callahan, McGuire, Bowen, Emerson, Stubbs, and Drake. Some of those are Democrats in that list. But look at all of the – so 14 assembly reps have signed on as a co-author. When you're in the assembly, a bill, you don't co-sign or co-sponsor. You sign on as a co-author. So this was introduced by, again, Sortwell, Tittle, 14 representatives. How many representatives do we have, Republican representatives? I want to say there's – I don't want to get the number wrong. I want to say it's there's 99 assembly districts, I believe. Let me go back here. I was just on the assembly 2021 assembly senators and representatives. There are, I think there's 99 assembly districts. I think we've almost got a, we almost have a supermajority, but we're just shy of a supermajority. So if there's 99, looking to see if they, yeah, they don't sort by district. Let me look here. I'll be there a second. There are, yep, 99. There's 99 assembly districts. I forget the exact split. If it's, I want to say there's around 60 conservatives, 60 Republicans in the Senate, and there's in the assembly. So 60-ish Republicans in the assembly, 14 have signed on to this bill. That's a big gap. Maybe more will be added, but look at who's not on this. Who's not on here? Representative Sanfilippo, my representative, not on there. Representative, and again, this, it's early. This might change. Representative Kuglich from New Berlin as well. He's not on here. So there's a lot of Republicans missing from here. And again, we'll see if it's early. It's been out less than a week. We'll see who gets signed on. It's summer. A lot of people might be on vacation. So we'll see. We'll see. I won't go, but it is a time to call. If your representative has not signed on to this bill, this is a time to make phone calls and see who's on. And this is, you know, this is what's so frustrating about being banned from Facebook, is that if I was on Facebook, I would be on that Wisconsin Carry Facebook group, pushing this thing, pushing people to make their phone calls. Why isn't, if your representative is not on this list, call them and ask them why. And again, be polite at this point. It's only been out for 4 days. Give it a couple weeks. Don't go looking for blood right now. But if in a couple weeks they're not signed on, then you can start being a little more pointed in your concern. But maybe I'll have my fiance make a post on Facebook, because she's still in the Wisconsin Carry Facebook group. But yeah, good bill. It'll be interesting to see. This bill, of course, is introduced when there's a Democrat governor, Governor Skeletor, who will never sign it. He will never sign this bill. And it'll be interesting to see if they would introduce this bill when we had a Republican governor. It'll be interesting to see how far this bill goes in the Senate and the Assembly. Will it get a vote? It's been referred to the Criminal Justice Committee. There is the companion bill that's been introduced in the Senate is, let me get it here. I had it up here. Senate bill. Oh, I lost it. I had too many things open. Senate bill. I think I lost it. Yeah, I had it up here somewhere. I have too many windows open on my computer. Is it this one? No, that's not it. There was a companion Senate bill introduced by, I'm totally going out, shooting from Senate Bill 502. That might be it. I know where it was. Here it is. Yes, Senate Bill 502. Minimum age. Here it is. Found it. Senate Bill 502, introduced by Senator Bradley, co-sponsored by Representatives Sortwell, Tittle, the same group. This is the Senate companion bill, lowers the minimum age to be eligible for a license to carry a concealed weapon from 21 down to 18. One senator's on this bill. Again, it's early. We'll give it time, but we're going to keep an eye on this one. What will be interesting to see is, this is introduced when we know that Tony Evers would veto it. We know there's not going to be a veto-proof majority. But it's good to show the pro-gun, maybe Democrat-leaning voters in the inner city of Milwaukee who supports your gun rights and who doesn't, who would allow 18-year-olds the right to self-defense using a gun and who wouldn't. What'll be more interesting to see, so I don't know if this will get out of committee. I don't know if it will get a floor vote. I highly doubt Robin Voss would give this thing a vote in the assembly. Highly doubt it. Same thing. Who's is LeMahieu? Is he the senator? The Senate Majority Leader? I think it's LeMahieu. Be surprised if he would give this a vote in the Senate. But if he does, like, let's say this passes the Senate and it passes the Assembly and Governor Skeletor vetoes it. Don't be surprised that this kind of bill wouldn't get introduced if we have a Republican governor. Let's say, you know, in 2 years we've got an election and Becky Cleafish is in, I hope it's not her, but she's as establishment gets, but Rebecca Cleafish gets elected governor of Wisconsin. Don't be surprised to not see this bill get introduced again. This is just like in the United States House of Representatives, or maybe it was the Senate too. They passed an Obamacare repeal when Obama was president. Of course, he vetoed it. And then but it passed with all the Republican support it needed in the Senate and in the Assembly, in the Senate and in the House of Representatives. But then when Trump became president, then we can't get an Obamacare repeal bill. Isn't that funny how they'll send it up there when they know it's going to get vetoed, but when it can actually pass, this is the same kind of thing here in Wisconsin. We'll see. They'll send this one up there when they know it can't, it's going to get vetoed, but will they send it up there when it has a chance of passing with the Republican will? And this is not to throw shade on these representatives, Sortwell, Tittle, Brangin. I mean, these are, because Sortwell, I mean, he's not, he would do it again. I mean, Sortwell, this isn't for show for him. You know, he would love to see this pass. Janelle Brangin too. I mean, I just because I know her. So the ones that are signed on to this, you know, they're not doing it for show. If you see Robin Voss vote for this in front of the full assembly, that's for show, in my opinion, in my prediction, because I don't think he would do it and let it go forward if there was a Republican governor. And why do I think that? Because for the last, you know, from 2013 to 2018, when he got beat, Scott Walker and Robin Voss did everything they could to keep any substantive gun rights bills from seeing the light of day. Here's another just quick comment I made. You know, everybody sits here, even Republicans and conservatives sit there and they promote this notion that, Donald Trump, he's a mean tweeter. He should stop using Twitter so much. You know, Donald Trump brings this stuff on himself. Donald Trump, you know, he'd be so, look, I've made the point in my opinion that this whole garbage about Donald Trump being a mean tweeter or Donald Trump's personality is just junk. There's nothing wrong with Donald Trump's personality. There's nothing wrong with what Donald Trump does with Twitter. Too many people don't even actually hear what he does and says. They only see what the media says that he says. But here's Kate Coyne McCoy, chief strategist of the Rhode Island Democratic Party. Senator Lindsey Graham, who's been fully vaccinated, announced earlier, this was last week, that he came down with flu-like symptoms and he was diagnosed with coronavirus last Monday by the House physician about a week ago. Symptoms are mild and he said that he'll be quarantining for 10 days. This prominent Democrat, chief strategist of the Rhode Island Democrat Party, took to Twitter and said, "It's wrong to hope he dies from COVID, right? Asking for a friend. / COVID is not over. # Lindsey Graham." Here's a chief strategist for the Rhode Island Democratic Party facetiously saying it's wrong to hope. Look, everybody knows what this means. When you say it's wrong to say something, you're asking for a friend, you're really asking for yourself, but you're kind of making it, you know, giving yourself plausible deniability that you know that's not me, I'm asking for a friend. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that comes out of Democrats. But Trump is the mean tweeter. Give me a break. Trump brings on himself. Trump has a personality. Bullshit. The only thing that Trump has said that I think would qualify as bad taste, off color, controversial was the comment in the bus, you know, grabbing women by the pussy, which was a hot mic moment. It is locker room talk. It's just guys joking amongst guys. Clearly, if that's how he did his ran his life, grabbing women by the crotch that didn't want to be grabbed by the crotch, he would have been sued by now. It's a joke. But that's the only thing. Any of the other things? I mean, I honestly couldn't think of one thing Trump has said that is so. I mean, he's, you know, someone criticized him and he'll say something like, oh, you know, she's kind of a, what, Heidi Klum says something about Trump and he says, oh, you know, Heidi Klum, she's kind of over the washed up anyway. I mean, he'll take a shot back, but it's always a shot back. He doesn't throw the first punch, but he'll slap back. And oh, Trump's a mean tweeter. I mean, it's just garbage. The mean tweeters, I mean, geez, look at the things that the anchors from CNN say and all these liberals say. This perpetuating the notion that Trump has, you know, an abrasive personality is just junk. It's just a myth. And we should reject this myth that Trump mean tweets and understand that, honestly, compared to the stuff other people say, so much worse coming out of the left. There's another thing I was going to talk about. There's a weird thing about being a Generation Xer. Maybe this is something that everybody in every generation feels, but you always, I mean, your perspective is your life, certainly. You know what I mean? Every generation probably feels like, I just feel so fortunate to have been a Gen Xer because, my gosh, when I was a kid, the first president that I really remember was Reagan. And gosh, what a better, he was such a great public speaker. And I will say that. I will say Donald Trump isn't the best public speaker. He does good, but he just doesn't always deliver quite as succinctly as you might want. But he's still good. But Ronald Reagan, man, he was a great orator. I mean, he was an actor. Go figure. I mean, the guy had... Getting to grow up with Ronald Reagan as the first president I remember was just, it makes me feel so fortunate to be a Generation Xer. And then I feel like the 80s were like, you know, that was the age of the video music era. Some of the, and maybe, again, maybe I'm biased. I suppose people from the Beatles generation say, oh, I was so fortunate to grow up with the Beatles. And again, that was prior to my, but I just feel like the 80s was such awesome music. Such fantastic music. And I don't know, people now probably, you know, your other generations may not think the same and they may laugh at me and say, oh, you think, Duran Duran and, the Cars. And I'm trying to think of some of those real poppy, OMD, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, Def Leppard, Bon Jovi. I mean, those are some good rock bands, but I'm thinking of some of the real poppies. Richard Marx. What are some of those real, like, late 80s, like, oh, New Kids on the Block, like that? that probably doesn't fall in the category of greatest music of all time, even though for me, I loved it because that was my high school time. You know, New Kids on the Block and Martika and Milli Vanilli. But early 80s, like Van Halen, Duran Duran, I thought was an awesome band. It was one of my favorite bands. I mean, I just feel like that was such a, I'm thinking of some of the other ones. Journey was early 80s, Journey, great band. I think Journey would be considered an iconic band of all time. Certainly, you know, Foreigner, U2, REO Speedwagon, early 80s for some of those. Early to mid 80s, maybe. But I'm trying to think of some of those real European pop groups that, some of the one hit wonders. Who's some of the other one hit wonders? Who sings Take On Me? Is that Aha? But just some of those real poppy, groups from the 80s. But then the 80s, you had, I think about this as a Gen Xer. I sat there in elementary school, middle school, and we thought that there could be nuclear war. There was the Cold War. There was the, you know, we thought about those kinds of things. We worried about those kinds of things. I remember being, I don't know, fifth grade, sixth grade, and worrying about nuclear war. It was something that our teachers talked about. But then I guess it was probably, I think high school for me, we saw the end of the Cold War. We saw the fall of the Berlin Wall. And it just, I remember as a, what I'm, where I'm going with this is just this, this perspective of a Generation Xer. Vietnam War ended in 74. So there wasn't a war when we were kids, when I was a kid, because Gen X is, I was kind of towards the mid to end of Generation X. But there wasn't a war going on. So, because I was born in 74, kids that were born in, you know, the late 60s who are still Generation X and or mid 60s, I think, what is Generation X here? What year it is? Generation X. Between 65 and 1980, that was Generation X. So yeah, so 65, you're born in 65. By the time you're 5 years old, 1970, you probably had a little bit of, maybe had a little bit of memory of the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War was winding down. But for the most part, Gen Xers, you know, we were never exposed to the draft. I think the last time the draft was instituted was Vietnam. So it was, again, it was just the Cold War for us. So it felt like, I remember when I was younger, I thought that we'd never see a real war again. After Vietnam, it just, you know, it seemed like war was something that was in the past. World War I, World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam. It was just, it was like something that couldn't happen again. It just seemed unlikely that you were going to have that. The Berlin Wall falls. The Cold War was real, but for that reason, the threat of nuclear war, that we thought there wouldn't be other wars because of the threat of nuclear war. Like, that's how every war is going to end. There's not going to be any other wars because the only other potential war would be nuclear war. So I remember as a youngster just thinking that if you joined the military, you were never going to go see conflict. You were never going to go see the theater of war, you know, because all war when for a young Gen Xer was going to be nuclear war. I mean, so then we saw the fall of the Berlin Wall, and it seemed like freedom had won. I mean, the communism had been defeated with the Berlin Wall coming down. I remember thinking that in high school, it's like, yeah, look, democracy is just, freedom is won. Communism has been defeated. And then the leftovers of totalitarianism was like Iran and the Middle East and stuff. But it seemed like, you know, Germany had gone, East Germany at least. Now there's the unified Germany. Russia had seemed to be more, you know, with the Gorbachev years, and it just had seemed to be more mainstreaming, even though I certainly would never say that Russia was a free country, that wouldn't be a characterization I'd use. But so that was like high school and college, where you just felt like the world's a free place. Like communism has really been defeated, except for some of these third world countries, like the Middle East, like Libya, like Iraq, like Iran, like Afghanistan. But then I look at now, with the rise of China. And, you know, it seemed to me like as a Generation Xer, like freedom had won and there was no way of going back. And then now I look at where we're at as a country right now. I look at the rise of China. I look at the aggression from Russia. I mean, communism hadn't been defeated, but we now have totalitarianism disguised as democracy here in the United States. And again, what a switch, because in high school, as a Gen Xer, I thought high school and college, like communism, totalitarianism was dead. I mean, it was never coming back. It had been defeated. But then I look at where we are today, and I think it's here. It's still in its traditional form in Russia. You still got all these Russian spies and people poisoning and, you know, with the radioactive poison agents, all this other stuff, that there's still that crap going on in Europe and in Eastern Europe. And you've still got traditional communism in China. But then you've got this new totalitarianism here in the United States. A federal agencies weaponized, more attention spying on citizens than threats. People that were simple trespassers in the Capitol on January 6th being held without bail, all the executive orders of the last year. I mean, we've got totalitarian big tech censorship. I mean, look at Biden issuing the moratorium on evictions was ended, and Biden just extends it, even though he said that, yeah, there's been court rulings that say, I mean, just we're in a post-constitutional America, but we're in a post-freedom world. Like, I wouldn't sit here now and say that freedom's winning anymore. When I was in high school and college, I would have thought, you know, democracy in the broad sense, democracy, democratic republic, because again, the United States is a democracy. We're a democratic republic, a representative republic that has democratic principles. But yeah, I thought that, you know, for the most part, communism had been defeated when I was in high school and it was never coming back. It's back. I mean, it was never gone from Russia. It was never gone from China. Maybe we thought that it was gone and being defeated, but maybe it was on a little bit of a ebb. But it's certainly back full force in those countries. And then here in the United States, we've got totalitarianism disguised as democracy. I mean, it's so weird. It's unbelievable. It's part of the reason it's so hard. I was thinking this past week, like, I've been so frustrated this summer, and I've got so much anger bottled up about how we've gotten screwed over in this country. Maybe other people feel the same way. I thought that I was just bummed this summer and that I was too busy and that I was just depressed about that, but it really is anger. Like, cause I'm so angry at how freedom has been stolen away in this country. I'm so angry about how prosperity has been stolen away. Look at gas prices. We were energy independent. We had gas coming out of our wazoo. And now because of the government, it cost me $1,800 to fill up my yacht. Now because a year ago, that would have been $900. Now because of government, we've got labor shortages. Not because of a recession, not because of economic cycles, because of government, we've got labor shortages. Because of government, we've got supply chain shortages. Because of government, you can't build a house now. Lumber is so damn expensive. Because of government, you can't get your car repaired. There's such a labor shortage. You know, it is anger. You know, it's anger. It's anger over the COVID bullshit. It's anger now about turning on the news every night and still seeing COVID bullshit and lies. I mean, it really is anger. It's just all this bottled up anger because of all the things that we've had stolen from us, taken from us unjustly, our freedoms. I don't know. I've always been, well, there was a time when, you know, you can say you're young and naive. And I would say I was always more interested in politics than most kids. I was, as a kid, I was more interested in business and adult things. I mean, one of my favorite movies ever was Wall Street. I think I saw that for the first time when I was in junior high, maybe was the first time I saw Wall Street. I just loved it. I was enamored by it. So I was always a little bit more interested in politics and things than most kids. I was always interested in adult things, but I used to think even as a kid, as a younger person, and even as a young adult, I used to think that we all wanted the same things, Republicans and Democrats, that we just had different ways to get there. And some ways that worked and some ways that didn't. But whether it was economic prosperity, whether it was more recently healthcare, gun control and crime, I mean, that's why we conservatives fail too often. I used to think that both Republicans and Democrats wanted economic prosperity. We just had different ways to get there. I used to think that regarding health, both Republicans and Democrats wanted a healthy population and just different methodologies of getting there, some through free government healthcare. But I look at the last year with coronavirus and, you know, it's very revealing. Gun control and crime. I used to think that Democrats wanted less crime and that the Democrats' push for gun control was genuinely to reduce crime. But that's why we conservatives fail too often, because too often we conservatives, we're trying to educate Democrats when we should be trying to defeat them. And I want to give you some examples of each of these. Again, I used to think that Democrats were just uninformed, uneducated regarding the issues, because you could have an educated Democrat who was a doctor, so they're educated, but uninformed on public policy issues. But I used to think that Democrats, again, were uninformed and uneducated, and I'm talking about even elected Democrats. So example for taxes, I used to think we all want economic growth, right? I mean, we all want jobs, but that's actually wrong. Because now we've seen that lower tax rates led to increased tax collections. And this has been proven in the past as well. So I used to just think that Democrats had forgotten, or they just were uneducated. Democrats didn't realize that if you lower tax rates, the government's going to get more money. And the Democrats want the government to have more money. But now the liberals are still pushing for higher taxes, higher corporate tax rates. And you say, why do the Democrats keep pushing things they know don't work? I'm going to come back to that one. But before I answer that question, I want to go to healthcare. People think Democrats just want, safe, healthy populace, just like Republicans do. That's wrong. Democrats don't want a safe, healthy populace. Look, we know hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin make COVID totally treatable, nothing worse than the flu, which we've never had mandates and lockdowns for. But yet Democrats are still pushing vaccines and masks and all the shit that doesn't stop COVID, but harms the economy and harms people's lives. And you say, why do Democrats keep pushing things that we know don't work? I'm going to come back to that one. Example, gun control. We think Democrats want to reduce crime, like we do. But that's wrong. Gun folks, we always thought we just need Democrats to understand. We just need to educate them. If Democrats understood that criminals don't follow the laws, if Democrats understood that a shotgun with buckshot, if they were just educated that a shotgun with buckshot is more deadly in a crowd mass shooting situation than an AR-15, if Democrats just understood that red flag laws don't work to stop mass shooters, if Democrats understood that if they were just educated on guns it only takes 2 seconds to swap out magazines, so a 10-round magazine is really no different than a 20-round magazine in a mass shooting situation. It's not going to stop the carnage to make a mass shooter have to have 10-round magazines to have 500 rounds instead of, 10 50-round magazines. Universal background checks. We pro-gun folks know criminals are totally unaffected and they'll keep transacting the same way that they do. But so we just think if Democrats were just educated, if Democrats just understood, if we just had some education on the economic side, I had always thought that if Democrats were just educated, if they were just shown that these conservative policies worked, but this is where I was very naive when I was younger. And I'd say it's probably even on the guns. I figured out with guns probably in 2012 or 13. It was right after Sandy Hook that I figured it out. But now I figured it out on all the other issues too. Democrats know that their policies don't, for example, Democrats know that raising taxes reduces revenue to the government. Democrats know that gun control only affects the law-abiding and doesn't affect criminals. And I'm talking about elected Democrats. Your run-of-the-mill dumb Democrat voters, some of them don't know. They're just stupid and they believe what they're told on the news and by their, these elected liars in the Democrat Party. But elected Democrats, they know. Okay, well, maybe not AOC. I mean, she's really fucking dumb. She might not know. But the rest of the elected Democrats, they know. Nancy Pelosi, she knows. Nancy Pelosi knows that raising taxes. Joe Biden knows that raising taxes is going to reduce tax collections to the federal government. It's going to suppress the economy. He knows this. He knows if you wanted more money coming into the government treasury, you would keep tax rates low because more private enterprise sends more money in. So you have to ask your Democrats know that we could end this COVID nightmare by embracing hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin. As soon as someone, an at-risk person tests positive, they should start them on a prophylactic dose of hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin. Democrats know we could end the COVID-19 pandemic. Democrats know that their gun control doesn't stop crime. Again, I'm talking about elected Democrats. So why do elected Democrats keep pushing things that they know don't work? And here's the thing. Conservatives need to understand, we don't want the same thing. I was naive. I thought we wanted the same thing. We just had a different way. Because you talk to a dumbass Democrat voter, and they'll say, well, we both want prosperity. We just have a different way to get there. Elected Democrats, that's not what they believe. Elected Democrats do not want the prosperity that we do. You got to get that through your head. And okay, it's through yours, but you got to realize it, get it through your kids' head. Get it through your friends. We want freedom, Republicans. Democrats want control. Democrats will sacrifice everything for control. Economic prosperity. Even when the government takes in more in revenue, your liberals were hurt harder than anybody when it came to Hollywood, movies shut down. I mean, all this stuff. You can't do concerts and all stuff. Democrats were willing to take it on the chin economically for control because the control was more important to them than the money. So economic prosperity, I used to think when I was young and naive that we both want economic prosperity. The Democrats just have a different way of getting there and theirs won't work, but that they did want economic prosperity. Not true. Even though the government takes in more revenue when tax rates are lowered, here's the problem. This is why Democrats don't want prosperity. Because when you lower tax rates, the government brings in more tax revenue because there's more investment, more economic activity. The private sector, though, is growing faster than government. Yes, government's taking in more money, but the private sector is taking in even more money. The private sector is even growing more. If we lower taxes, the government gets more taxes, but they know it's only, the Democrats know it's only because private entities are making way, way more, and they're only getting a small piece. Yeah, the Democrats get 20 cents of every dollar in taxes, but the private sector gets 80. And money is power. Money lets you do things. You know, people don't work for free. Yachts don't build themselves. Advertising isn't free. Publishing isn't free. Money is power. Democrats know with tax cuts, the private sector is growing way faster than the government sector. And that's a threat. Even though with tax cuts, the government takes in more revenue, the private sector is taking even more revenue. And that's a threat. That's what they can't have. Democrats can't have private individuals with so much money. Democrats can't have the private sector growing faster than government. If the private sector is getting rich and the government's just getting a little bit more money, or even a lot more money, but not as much lot more as the private sector is growing faster than the government sector, and that's not okay with Democrats. Look what the MyPillow guy does with his money. Look what Donald Trump did with his money. Look what the Koch brothers used to do with their money. Democrats will sacrifice revenue for power. They don't want the same thing. Democrats don't want prosperity. Because prosperity coming from the private sector means the private sector has power and the government doesn't have power, and that's what they don't want. When I was younger and I thought, oh, the Democrats, they would love to have full employment. Bullshit. The Democrats do not, elected Democrats. Your dumbass Democrat voters, oh, they think that that's what they're voting for. They never get it. Elected Democrats, they know that they're job killers. They know their policies kill jobs. They're okay with that because that increases the power that they have. More people relying on government, more people. Healthcare, COVID. The Democrats push things that don't work because the government solution is power. Governments don't want strong men and strong women. Governments don't want healthy men and healthy women because healthy men and healthy women don't need government. Government doesn't want you healthy. Healthy people are free. Healthy people have the energy and the enthusiasm and the motivation. They can do what they want. They want you dependent. They want you sick. They want you... Obamacare. Obamacare was the greatest expansion of the federal government in who knows how. This is why there was no weight loss push, even though obesity was the greatest risk factor for death from COVID. Hell, 18 months, Think of all the things this country could have done if healthcare was given the media time. The push that the lockdowns and mask mandates and peer pressure for all that bullshit, social distancing, now vaccines and all this stuff. If they'd have put that kind of energy, that kind of promotion, that kind of push into healthy living, we'd have a healthier population, a population that doesn't need as much medical services. We'd have done Medicaid and Medicare a huge favor, lower costs because older people being more health. No, the government, they don't want that. They want the government solution, and they'll sacrifice lives to get it. Gun control. Democrats will sacrifice lives. Democrats don't want to save lives. For Democrats, the armed citizens are a risk. Law-abiding armed citizens. Democrats don't care about crime. Look at Chicago. Look at Milwaukee. They're not doing anything that... Look at how they drop gun charges and release hardened criminals. To Democrats, you are the threat. The law-abiding. They have control over criminals. They have no control over you. Criminals have no right to keep and bear arms, and Democrats know it. Democrats know they will almost assuredly be in the system again, these criminals. Democrats know that criminals are going to be back in the system. Democrats know that they could come down hard anytime they want on one of these criminals. But citizens are the collateral damage in the Democrats' quest for power. You get robbed, you get carjacked, you get mugged, no big deal. Yet peacefully walk into the Capitol and take pictures during a riot / protest, solitary confinement for 6 months. Defraud the public like Hillary and Joe Biden, look the other way. But Trump, who's giving power back to the people, to the private sector, they've scrutinized every transaction, every tax write-off, they pursue him with the vim and vigor of a heroin addict looking for a fix. But yet they turn the other eye when it comes to Hillary and Joe Biden defrauding the American public. Democrats don't want the same thing we do. We want freedom. Democrats want control. Stop trying to educate Democrats. Stop trying to convince Democrat politicians and start trying to defeat them. You know, younger people, that you can appeal to them. Tell the real story to young people that Democrats don't want the same thing. This whole Pollyanna, we just want the same thing. They just have different ways to go about it. No, forget about the 40-year-old liberal next door to you. That's a person's a total lost cause. Forget about trying to educate a Democrat politician. They know gun control. Stop trying to educate Democrats on gun control because they know that gun control doesn't work. You think they know gun control doesn't stop crime. You think that that's what gun control is about. They know it's not. Democrat politicians know gun control is not about stopping crime. So when you're sitting there telling them, hey, more guns doesn't equal more crime, Democrats know that. But they don't want you to have a gun because you're the one they're worried about. You're the one they can't control. Democrats want control over you. They've already got control over the lawbreakers. They've already got control over the criminals. Stop trying to educate Democrats, politicians, to see the light, to understand that, no, they get it. You stop being naive that elected Democrats want the same things we do, because they don't. They don't. We want freedom. They don't. We want prosperity. They don't. Prosperity means the private sector grows. They don't want that. They want the government growing and the private sector stagnant. So the government always stays more powerful than the private sector. You got a private sector company. The government hates small business. Small businesses can't be jerked around. Look at Coke. Look at Ford. Look at all these big companies. Look at Kroger. Look at Walmart. The Democrat Party says jump and they jump. The Democrat Party says mask mandates and boom, every store posts a mask. You know, the government wants in New York wants mask vaccine passports, and every business in New York, boom, falls in line. Big businesses are easy for the government to control. Government has so much leverage over big businesses. Small businesses, government hates them. They can't control them. So anyway, my last topic I was going to do tonight was going to be to talk about yachting. You know, I talked last week because we had our first trip up to Door County, and it wasn't what I expected, wasn't what I thought it would be. When I spent this much money on a boat, the image that I had in my head of what it was going to be like, I've had to ditch that. I've had to give up on that. It's just, I thought now that we have a yacht, I mean, we can just watch the weather forecast and we don't have to reserve a VRBO up in Door County. We just watch the weather and there's 4 good days of sunshine and boom, let's head up to Door County for the weekend on the yacht. And, it's been such an eye-opening experience. I don't regret it. I don't want to go back to my old boat. I can't even say at some point in the future I might not change that, might not, you know, feel that desire to be boating inland again. But you know, yachting is such a different animal than the boating that I've done before. I mean, I had 20 years of experience with pleasure boats, you know, runabout, speed boats, pleasure boats. So, you know, the funny thing is you know, the boats I previously had, and some of them were big. I mean, I had 27-foot Sea Ray, but still just a, you know, pleasure boat, power boat, 8.5-foot beam, it's a trailer boat. Even the big ones, even the 27-footer, the 27-foot boat was a little bit long. It was 6 feet longer than my 21-foot boat, but it handled the same. I mean, you know, now my boat, is 38, 39 feet. I think with the engines is probably close to 40. So it's, you know, 12 feet longer than my other boat, but it's just a completely different animal. My first boats, the runabouts, the pleasure boats, bow riders, you can manhandle those boats. You can muscle them around. Very nimble, very light, relatively speaking. I mean, some were 5,000, 6,000 pounds, but they were very light, relatively speaking. But you could manhandle it around. Hell, you could, on those boats, you could reach over the side, even like a, you know, 30-foot Baja. You could reach over the side of the boat, grab the pier. You know, you're coming into the dock a bit hot. Someone can grab the pier and catch you and fend you off. You know, 5,000, 8,000 pound boat, easy peasy. 24,000 pound yacht, you aren't going to win that momentum battle. It's simple physics. You know, there's no margin for error. In a small boat, you know, you're in a tight marina, you get blown off center between the piers and all these boats and all that. You know, you can reach out and defend yourself off of a dock boat. Not in a yacht, you couldn't reach it. I mean, there's too much real estate to cover. In my yacht, getting from the bow back to the helm, back to the stern, I mean, that's honestly a 50-foot trip because you're not going as the crow flies. You got to walk from on the starboard side of the boat at the bow. Then you'd have to walk, you know, 6 feet. It's a 12.5-foot beam. So 6 or 7 feet to the port side to get to the walkthrough, backwards to go through the walkthrough. Then you're in the helm in the cockpit. Then you'd have to walk about 8 feet to get back to the helm. And then walk back around the helm and walk back another, you know, 10 feet or whatever to get to the back of the boat. It's a 50-foot walk. So even just like trying to dock yourself and trying to get from one, you know, the boat, the front of the bow starts coming around. The bow is going to hit the pier first. You could run up to the front. My old boat, run up to the front of the boat, lean over the bow and catch yourself there. In a yacht, you can't do it. First off, a yacht, you're so high off the water. You know, it's 6 feet down to get to the dock. So it's just, you know, it's so much different. You know, a yacht, you have to respect it. It's so heavy. It's not nimble. It's powerful, but it's not nimble. It doesn't turn fast. Again, it's powerful, but that much power is as much a liability as an asset on a big boat. Big boat, not agile, not ergonomic. I mean, you can reach over the side of a 27-foot power boat and grab the pier. You can't reach over the side of the yacht and grab a cleat. I mean, it's 4 to 6 feet down, and even Giannis Antetokounmpo doesn't have arms that long. So it's just been such a eye-opening experience for me, yachting versus boating. Not being able to go where you want. Used to be I looked at the sky and the radar, and if that was clear, boom, I went boating. Now I got to check wave forecasts for days and weeks out. It's just such a different animal. You know, I'm starting. So it's been a more stressful summer. Last summer, we just kind of did the Port of Milwaukee thing, South Shore. We hung around a lot. My live feed's dropping off here, but I don't think Lon left the chat or left the live feed. I think he went to bed. So I'm going to go a little overtime here on the commentary. But, you know, it's been such a – this summer has been more stressful. And I don't mean that in a regretful kind of way, but from a boating standpoint, last summer was pure bliss. We took delivery of the new boat. It was a couple of weeks of getting used to just piloting the damn thing. But, you know, going down to South Shore, drop an anchor, drop the beach door down, the hydraulic beach door, and just party and just it was just so chill. We did miss going inland, but we had a warm summer last summer. It was warm on the lake. The lake warmed up real nice there in August, and we did a lot of swimming in July and August on the yacht. So I didn't miss inland, and I heard inland was just crazy busy with everybody because of COVID lockdowns. Everybody was boating. We couldn't have gotten out on a lake, inland lake, if you'd have wanted to on a Saturday afternoon. But yeah, this summer's been more stressful and in some ways more disappointing, but I'm hoping that the disappointments lead to better things. And by that, I mean, I've had to reevaluate my perspective on what I'm going to be able to do with the yacht. And it would be different if I was, you know, retired. Hell, it would be different if I wasn't still such a gym rat, because I could work from my boat up in Door County. If the weather turned bad, we could stay up there for 3 or 4 days. Well, actually, I could. You know, Kim couldn't. She's got to work at the hospital. So sure, you know, I can work remotely. Kim can't. But that's what you really, if you really want to be able to use the yacht, you have to be super flexible in your schedule. You got to be able to head up to Door County, find a day that the weather's good and leave, not have to plan a week in advance. Look, for me, it was always leaving on Thursday to go up to Door County. And so if Thursday had big waves, you weren't going. But if Wednesday or Friday did, I can't go because I only had a 4-day trip. Someone who could be more flexible in scheduling, they could say, okay, we're supposed to planning on going Thursday. Oh, waves are bad Thursday. We're going to wait till tomorrow. Oh, waves are bad Thursday. We're going to leave Wednesday. You see, I can't do that. My schedule doesn't let me do it like that. Then you can get up there. And then you get up there. When we were up in Door County last week, you get up there. We're at Fish Creek. We're having a good time. It's Friday night. We're docked. We're ready. And then all of a sudden, looking at the wave forecast at dinner on Friday, thinking that Saturday is our big chill party day, go to Nicolet Bay, drop the anchor all day long, do nothing, chill, drink bourbon. Head back to the dock at Fish Creek, which is just a four mile run around the point there for Peninsula State Park from Nicolet Bay back to Fish Creek. And then you're back at the dock. And all of a sudden we're at dinner on Friday thinking that Saturday is our big chill day, like the day we've really been looking forward to. And then realizing that Sunday, the wave forecast picked up, that was our travel day and we have to leave on Saturday versus we could have still had a nice day Saturday and then hung out. And Sunday would have been nice up there too. The weather was nice. And then come back Monday. Monday, the waves were beautiful. Monday, there was calm seas all the way back. But I couldn't do that. Came out to work at 6 a.m. on Monday. So it's not that the boat, it's not the fault of the boat. It's really the fault of my schedule and my lifestyle that we can't use the boat we went to. We think we're going to enjoy Michigan more because Michigan is a shorter trip. And that's the other thing. Spending $1,800, $1,900 in gas for a 3-day trip, that was just, you know, such a waste. I'm glad we did it. I got to see the coast all the way up to Door County. That was really interesting to see. But, it seemed like such a waste. It was a huge waste of gas. I mean, I think we're going to enjoy Michigan more because it's only, for our schedule, it's only a 3-day trip. So we can leave on a Friday, only takes 2 hours to get over there at a comfortable cruising speed. I mean, I could get over there in an hour and 10 minutes if I wanted to go full speed, but you get over there Friday. My weekends are more low key, less to pack into a day versus when we leave on a Thursday, I got to take extra blended Big Green Monsters. Those are the blended meals I drink with. I blend up chicken breast and all stuff. But anyway, people who know me well know what I'm talking about, but So yeah, we're thinking/hoping that Michigan is a place that we could. Here's the other thing. going up to Door County with the yacht, $1,900 in gas for the round trip. And it takes so long to get up there, you know, double the time it would take to go by car. It's quicker to get to Door County by vehicle, and it's much, much, much less expensive. A fraction of the cost to get up there by vehicle. I spent more in gas than I would have spent on a really, 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 really nice VRBO up in Door County. So there's no, but going to Michigan is a different story, because in 2 hours I can get to a part of Michigan that would take me 5 or 6 hours to drive. So then I'm starting to change the calculus and feel like I'm like winning. I feel like I'm winning, making a wise choice, because again, when I go to Door County with the yacht, I think, man, that was a rough ride up there. It wasn't the most comfortable ride. We got to, because we're always fighting the seas because we can't wait till there's a really good day. And then all that money and gas, it took so long to get up there. We could have been up there 2 hours earlier if we'd have driven the truck. Then we would have had a vehicle to drive around to restaurants and whatever, and we could have all these other things. But Michigan, I wouldn't think that. I wouldn't feel that way. In Door County, I thought, man, we could have driven up here quicker, less expensive, and had a vehicle up here and not be so worried about the wave forecast. Michigan, we can get there quicker by the boat, because otherwise you're driving all the way down around through Chicago, through all that traffic and all that crap, all the way around Gary, Indiana, all the way back up. Still less in gas, but it's much, you couldn't do a 3-day weekend to Michigan, because you'd spend 5 or 6 hours the first day. If you left Friday at noon, you're not going to get to Michigan until, well, then you're going to probably run into traffic through Chicago. You might not get to Michigan until 7 or 8 at night to where you want to be in Michigan. So Friday's dead. Then you get up Saturday and you got Saturday. And then Sunday, you got to come back. And Sunday, you're going to probably have a 5 or 6 hour drive back on Sunday. Take an hour to stop for lunch somewhere. So you can't do Michigan in a 3-day trip by truck, but you can do Michigan in a 3-day trip by yacht. So I'm going to feel a little bit better. We're scheduled to go to Saugatuck over Memorial Day weekend, Labor Day weekend. Leave on Friday, come back on Sunday, but we have a buffer day of Monday. If the weather's bad, we can come back on Monday if something, the weather changes. But here's the other thing. On a 3-day weather window, I'm going to have more confidence when we leave on Friday of what the wave forecast is going to be like on Sunday. It still can change, but I'm going to have more confidence in it with only 3 days to look forward to, have to look out 3 days and have to look out 4 days. The forecasts get exponentially better the closer you get in time. 7-day forecast for even the regular weather, 7-day forecast is just garbage. It's worthless. I mean, the 7-day forecast is just worthless. Sometimes they get the overall temperature trends. You know, we're going to have, because of where the jet stream set up, we know we're going to have warmer weather, but they don't know if it's going to be stormy or not, you know, necessarily. So I'm hoping to feel more validated in my decision to get rid of a trailer boat and go to a, because here's the other thing. If you want to take the Lake Express over, so to go to Michigan and back, go to Saugatuck and back with the yacht, I figured it's about $5 or $6 a mile is what it cost me to take the yacht somewhere. So if you got a 80-mile run to Michigan times, let's just say 5.5 at an efficient cruise speed, that's $440 in gas to get there. So times two, that's $880 in gas to get there and back, to Michigan and back. If you want to take the Lake Express ferry with a vehicle and five people, you know, let's say Kim and the kids, we never do anything as a whole family anyway. I mean, Luke's 20-something. He's doing a college party thing. Sometimes the girls join us, sometimes they don't. But let's just say me, Kim, and four people plus the truck. And I don't know if I ever included the trailer in the boat in my calculus. But I think going over on the Lake Express round trip, you're probably close to $1,000 for four people plus the truck. I know for sure with my old trailer boat, it was I did the math. It was going to be like $1,200 just to get people over there and back on the ferry versus driving around through Chicago. So I feel like it's more sensible. It just seems like a wiser, less wasteful endeavor to take the yacht to Michigan than to Door County. It's quicker. It's half the distance to get to Michigan than it is to get to Door County. So half the fuel. I can do it in a shorter weather window. It's quicker than it would be driving. It's places that we haven't been before. And then the last thing is, again, that shorter weather window, I think a better chance to not get shafted with the forecast changing and having Michigan be impassable. So just a little random musings from a, I don't want to call myself an apprentice yachter, but maybe that's the right term, from an apprentice yachter trying to figure the whole thing out and master the fun. That's what I've really wanted to do. Is I had mastered trailer boating. I mean, I really had. I was such a phenomenal trailer boat. I don't mean that in an arrogant way. I mean, I had that down to a science. I knew where to launch my boat. I knew places to go with my boat on Lake Michigan and Milwaukee Harbor when it rained, that I could duck out of the weather. We could duck under Discovery World and wait out. If you had a day where there was going to be a big gust front come through, you know, it's sunny at 1 o'clock, but around 4 o'clock, this big gust front was going to come through. No problem. I would launch my boat. We'd be out there. It'd be sunny and hot. And then as soon as you see that storm front, that roll cloud, they call it, coming in, we would duck under Discovery World. I had found these lag bolts that fit into the old threaded spots where there used to be the forms that made these concrete stanchions, these concrete support structures down there that hold up Discovery World. Discovery World is built over the water. So I could sit there and tie myself up right underneath Discovery World and ride out. We rode out some massive thunderstorms underneath Discovery World. Sunny before, get under there, storm blows through, sun pops back out, boom. The minute the storm blows through, we're back out in the water and we're back in business. I did that many, many times. I had trailer boating down to Pewaukee Lake when there was, when it was busy. I knew where I could launch my boat, where I didn't have to find a parking spot. And then I had trailer boating down to Okachi Lake to get out there for the tie up when they had closed all the launch ramps. I knew how to get out there. I knew the tricks. I knew the, So this yachting thing is a new experience for me. And last summer I just dipped my toes in it. Sticking around the Milwaukee Harbor, we didn't go anywhere. We didn't cruise anywhere. We just used it like a day boat, and enjoyed the hell out of it. This summer, as I've tried to use it more like a yacht and really cruise with it, it's been more frustrating, a little bit more disappointing, in many instances. But I think I'm going to get to a point where I've mastered the art of yachting, like I had mastered and gotten trailer boating down to a science. I think I'll get better with the wave forecast. I'll get better with, I even figured this out on the way back from Door County. There's some speeds where if you speed up a little bit faster, it started getting a little bit rough, and I actually sped up. And because I sped up, the ride smoothed out, if that makes sense. You don't get down into the troughs as much at a little bit higher speed. You kind of stay a little bit more on top of the waves, and the strike pattern of how quickly those waves are coming, how separated those waves are, at a little bit faster speed, it was actually a more comfortable ride, which is kind of counterintuitive. You'd think, if the seas start getting bigger, you got to slow down. It was actually, and in some cases that's true, but in this case, a little bit faster was a little bit smoother. So I'm learning some of those things. Hopefully I'm not just watching for rain and, it used to be, I was just watching for rain. All I cared about was the temperature and the rain. sunny or cloudy, fine. I can boat neither, but I didn't like boating in the rain and I didn't like boating. And if it was cold, we would go to someplace different than if it was warm. If it's hot, you go here. If it's cold, we go down to the river. I'm hoping that now that I have to be exposed to a different kind of, I now have to watch for rain and I have to watch the wind and the wave forecast. Again, that's for cruising. For sticking around Milwaukee, I don't have to watch that. But it's been an experience a frustrating experience this summer, more so than previously, but I'm learning a lot, readjusting expectations, maybe getting a little bit more wise and realistic with some of our expectations of what we can do. And at the same point, getting more experience and being able to do things that push the limit a little bit, like being out in rougher conditions. So, yep. Well, I'll keep you guys posted. Next week's supposed to be 80 degrees, and we didn't get to boat yesterday because of the weather. It was looking like rain, so we decided not to take the yacht out. But as usual, you guys will hear me doing my my yacht talk probably at the end of the show. For anybody who, I've got some family members that listen to the show, so you know, some friends that don't mind hearing a little bit about the yachting endeavors. All right, you guys, so that's the show for this week. I feel like I did a little bit better job than last week. Last week, by the end of the show, man, I was like, my eyes were dry. I felt like I couldn't concentrate because I was getting really tired. I started the show a little bit earlier this week, so at 9:30 instead of 10. So we're getting out of here. I went a little bit overtime, so I think last week I finished the show at about 11:30. But so yeah, thank you everybody who tuned in. Thanks for Lon for catching it live, and anybody else who happened to catch it live. For those of you who catch the podcast, appreciate you tuning in the podcast. Like I always say, if you catch the podcast, shoot me an email, nik@wisconsincarry.org. Ah, my brother listens to this show, and he sent me a response to my commentary on Simone Biles, and I was gonna respond to that. And I forgot, but I've still got it on my list. So, bro, Mike, if you tune in next week, I'm going to hit that one. if I don't have too much other stuff to talk about, we'll talk about Simone Biles, and I'll respond to your. My brother has a little bit different opinion on the Simone Biles assessment than I did, and so I'd like to. Expand a little bit on mine, and you know, we're gonna have a different opinion on it, and that's cool, but I think my perspective you might find a little bit interesting of how I come to the conclusion I have that I don't think Simone Biles can qualify as the greatest of all time anymore based upon having to drop from the Olympics for the most part. Anyway, you guys have a great week. Carry on, be well armed.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.